favorite. My professional background, I'm actually a commercial relationship manager with Bank of America. I've been relationship manager for about a year, but I've been in the profession of finance for 8 years following graduation, immediately following graduation from college. And even before that, I've been on a journey with personal finance. So, you know, I'm here, I'm still striving to learn, like you said, gain some wealth and generate wealth as well as knowledge along the way. So thank you, Jay.
Cool. Go ahead, Trent.
Yeah, let's do it. So Trent Harvey, good evening, everyone. I'm a program manager currently in the tech industry. Prior to that, I worked in consulting and I have 5 years of experience in corporate finance. So very excited to talk about personal finance. It's something that's key to me. Love having conversations with my friends about it and sharing the wealth that I've been able to obtain through research or through my own experiences. So happy to be here with you guys and to answer any questions you may have.
Cool, man. So I really do appreciate you guys making the time to join us here. And man, we can get it started with we can share our personal finance journeys, because I know we don't all start from 100, right? We all start from zero and then we go to 100. Right. So I guess I can start it off myself with my own financial journey. So for everybody that doesn't know, I was born and raised in Michigan. So my parents, my dad was a cop for Wayne County and my mom worked for Ford for 30 years. So growing up, I didn't really get a scope of how money works until later down the line when about college time. Like I had my first credit card right out of 12th grade, and it was a Citibank silver card. I remember the card very, very, very particularly. So it was that, and I maxed that thing out. Like if you could tell me to spend something on something, I was using that card to spend it. So I maxed it out, putting gas into my 96 Ford Taurus. At that point where I was like, why am I maxing out a credit card to put gas in my car? Something's wrong here. It should be paid in cash, right? So that's where I actually started. I started thinking like, hey, where can I improve my own financial position at that time and become better, become wealthier, and move up? Because I don't like using credit cards. I don't like maxing them out. Now I have a BA in finance, and I have started my FIRE journey. So we'll touch on FIRE later on here in the podcast, but it is a financial independence, retire early. Just a little spoiler alert for everybody that doesn't know what it is. But I have recently started my FIRE journey, and I have been just investing, saving a little bit as well in a savings account, and just being smarter with money as I have lived my daily life. So I can pass it on to one of you. And if you guys want to just describe what your financial journey is to the people here, we can kind of see if there is a correlation between us three here.
I'll jump in. So I'm a little bit different from Jay in regards to the credit cards. So in my 12th grade year in high school, I actually had an economics teacher, and he put an emphasis on not getting credit cards right out of high school, because he said that, you know, those credit card companies are there to deceive you and get you to max your credit cards out and pay astronomical amounts of interest rates. And, you know, so I didn't get a credit card until I think I was maybe 22, 23, after I graduated college. And that's when I first got my first credit card. But that 12th grade year and that teacher pretty much got me. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, single parent home with my mother, and finance wasn't a big topic at all. But that 12th grade year and him speaking on those topics, having us do a project or in regards to stocks and things of that nature, which really drove my interest in, you know, getting into finance, understanding how the stock market works, how credit works, how debt savings and all of that works. In the 12th grade, which kind of pushed my career into finance where I am now. And my studies, but yeah, I kind of did a little different regarding the credit cards. I I didn't get one until, like I said, 22, 23. And at that point in time, I understood not to max them out and things of that nature. And I had one, only one for some years until I started really getting more of them. I'm a proponent of credit cards if you know how to manage it. It's all about debt management and risk risk management. But I'm a proponent of it because there are some benefits to having credit cards and things of that nature. And I'm pretty sure we'll later on talk about that good debt versus bad debt. We'll hit touch bases on that. So go ahead, Trent.
Yeah, so I'm born and raised suburbs of Chicago. Pretty large family. I have five siblings. I'm a first generation college student, so I think like you guys, a lot of this information was new to me as I went through college and learned more about economics, learning about investing and saving. So I didn't really have that background. Like Jay, I had a credit card right out of high school. I had a few actually, like really good credit limits too. So I was like, all right, I don't know if it's right, but like I'm gonna spend it. So very quickly, like accumulated a bunch of debt, that I had to figure out. And I think that was a turning point for me as well. Like, this is a lot of debt. I don't know how I'm gonna pay it off. So, went to school, got my first job, and a lot of people, you get a new job, and like as your income increases, like your expenses also increase. So you get a new car, right? You get a better apartment. You elevate yourself, and so like, you don't really see the difference in your income. And that was me. So I'm like, all right, like, how am I gonna like pay off this debt? Because I'm still trying to live this life. I still want to travel with my friends. I want to do all these things, and so I think that's when it really clicked for me, and I had to be more intentional on like how I'm budgeting, spending, and investing my money. So that's when my journey began.
Cool, man. See, so we've all had those different journeys with credit cards, and they have either treated us very well, or or treated us negatively. So I wanted to kind of segue into why personal finance is so important, and it goes hand in hand with also the lack of financial literacy in the minority household. So it can be, you can be Asian, Hispanic, Black, or whatever, but in the minority household, money is referred to as something like it's taboo. Like, no one really speaks about money or how important it is or how it works. So I want to ask you two, why do you think personal finance is so important?
I'll start. So, I personal finance to me is important because it not only allows you to attain more out of life, those things that you want, not only your necessities, but also your wants. And it just gives you a better understanding of how the world works. The world in itself is a business. I mean, if you understand that in itself, and have a foundation on that of how the world works, personal finance will become just as important as to how you focus on how the world revolves. And that's really how I look at it. If Jay-Z said, I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. Because you are essentially, your brand is to be a business, and if you look at it that way, and you scale yourself, personally in regards to finance, those things will come in the attainment of that generational wealth, which I'm a big proponent of, because I didn't come from that. That's my biggest focus now, is to really try to gain that understanding of that foundation of generational wealth. So that's really why that personal finance journey is important to me.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll just add too that a lot of people, as you think about like people who work in the industry, right? So if you have a job or you're an employee, the way for you to really gain that wealth is through like investments, right? So it could be through stocks, real estate, whatever, right? But you're not going to become a wealthy person through working a 9-to-5. That's just the reality. Like, you can create your own business, which is separate, but the reality of it is you're going to gain wealth through these tools that you learn through your personal finance journey. So that's learning more about stocks and investments and bonds, right? And real estate, right? So many people are able to accumulate that wealth through these different avenues, and you learn it through this personal finance journey. So for me, like I said, coming from a community where it wasn't something that I knew growing up, so I want to be sure that I'm educating others so that they don't have to go through the same traps that I went through, and also building that generational wealth too, so like my kids don't have to start from the same point that I started, right? I want to be able to pass off some equity, right, some assets to my kids so that they can start at a better, higher point. So
Yeah, man. Wow. I love that, man. You guys really provide some great feedback. So, for myself, man, to be honest with you, it's my fuel for personal finance being so important is not working for anybody anymore. So my fuel is financial independence and then retiring early. So when I heard about the term, I was like, wait, there's a term for that? Because I was thinking it. I was like, I want to retire about the age of 40. And I just need guidance. And I went to YouTube and I was like, let me retire early. And they popped up with like a few different financial YouTube channels, like My Rich Journey or some other people that I follow now. They have consistently been making videos about retiring early, and that just planted a seed in my head. I'm like, wait, so if I use my money in the right way, I'll never have to work for anybody, and I can, if I invest, whether it's in stocks, crypto, real estate, you can acquire those assets, and then you can see them just grow with a compound interest, and then you can be like, hey, as long as I meet my FIRE number and my financial investment portfolio, I will never have to work for anybody ever again. So that was my fuel, and that's why I think personal finance is so important. And the majority of people that are watching or listening to this won't really, they're too distracted by social media or other things to really focus on the future. Because you don't want to be 60 years old being a greeter at a supermarket, right? You want to eventually stop working because you physically will not be able to work past a certain age. So you got to have that money, that reserve ready to be like, hey, I have 1.5 million in my investment portfolio. If I take out 50 grand, I should be good for the rest of my life, because we'll explain it later. We'll explain how all that stuff works later, but personal finance is super duper important, because it is your life that you are financially planning for. So you have to do that in the right way. And we can definitely hit on the next topic and just segue into investing. So I don't know if this is a topic that Dale, if you're able to comment on in any capacity, but investing is the key to financial independence. Period. So, do you guys have any experience with investing? Like, it doesn't matter if it's crypto, stocks, index funds, REITs, options, or just like a high yield savings account. Like, how do you guys usually like to look at investing?
So yeah, I don't mind. I can speak on it, some information higher level. You know, I'm kind of just to let everyone know, I'm kind of restricted on what I can speak on being licensed. But yeah, in regards to my personal journey, in regards to investing, I am within. I do have a brokerage account that I use to invest in stocks. I also dabble in crypto. I've looked into REITs as well. So there are a few things that I actually dabble in. High yield interest savings accounts. I have those, which is more so for my savings and my emergency fund. I'm a proponent of paying myself first. So before I do anything, that's the very first thing I do, is to pay myself first, which is to save. And that's all based on budgeting. So there's an acronym that I kind of stand by in regards to my personal finance. It's basics. So basic is B, budget. Then you have S, which is savings. The third one is investing. I, investing. And C is credit. And that's kind of how I go about how I do my personal financial journey, is to really follow that acronym. And, you know, so in regards to investing, you know, there's always, I think there's stepping stones in order to get to that level. And if you miss any of those steps, I think you'll have trouble attaining that understanding of how those things work. So like I said, I do invest into stocks. I invest in crypto. I'm trying to learn that. Crypto is fast-paced and is very risky, volatile. But I think as long as you are doing your research and have kind of get an understanding of how those things work and how those mechanisms work, such as NFTs, you know, some other lower risk things, investments are like bonds, you know, so it just depends on how you really want to look at your risk tolerance. When you think about risk and what you're willing to lose, there's always a potential loss in regards to investing. So don't ever let anyone tell you that you only gain. You can lose in anything you invest in. So have an understanding of that you have to know what your risk tolerance is. And the greater the risk, the greater the reward. But that also means the greater the chances of losing money. So just have an understanding of how that all works. But yeah, that's those are things I invest in, what I go about doing so.
Okay. Trent, go ahead.
So I also currently invest. I use Robinhood, which is a popular app. I'm sure most of you guys know about it. So it's an app that allows you to invest your personal funds into different stocks. I think there's some cryptocurrencies that you can do through there. There's definitely some rates through there. So I've been using that for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years. And before that, there was another app, something with a bear. I can't think of the name of it. But, you know, there's different apps, different tools that you can use to invest. It provides a lot of information too. You can look up the companies, their releases, you know, so it's a 10K on your release. Any news in the company, right? Because that's a lot of times when you see fluctuation in the stock price. So you want to make sure that you're up to date on what's happening with the company. Like, are there any investments? Did they acquire another company? Are there any mergers? Like, all these things affect the price. So you want to make sure you do your research as well, I would say. Also have conversations with friends about, you know, what are some stocks that you're looking into? I invested in like 3 companies recently through like referrals from friends. You know, the friends have done the research and they can tell me like, this is why they're investing. I'm like, okay, you've done your research. Like, I'm gonna do the same thing. So it kind of alleviates, you know, me having to do that research on my own. So, I mean, that's been very helpful for me. I understand options. I studied accounting in undergrad and did corporate finance work. So I did a bunch of research to understand options. I don't normally use it. It's essentially a way to like purchase an option to sell or buy the stocks without investing the full amount in it. So it's very tricky. It's difficult to do as well. Like, a lot of people make it seem like it's very easy. If it's that easy, right, then everybody would know where the market is going. So if you have experience in it, feel free to go, you know, go for it. But I think it's something that's, you know, more difficult to do than most things. So I don't really use that, but I do invest in stocks pretty frequently.
Cool.
Just to jump in there, I do dabble in options, and it's very risky, as Trent stated. And very volatile, but if you do your research, you go about, and there are 2 ways to go about it. Fundamental analysis, which you stated, you know, the 10K is researching the company's financials and their performance, or even the technical analysis is Richard learning how to read the charts and different strategies in regards to that. But yeah, I do dabble into option calls primarily, but I also do puts, which is, you know, looking at whether the company goes up, increases in value or decreases in value. But again, very risky. If you aren't familiar with it, you know, I would say learn it first before you jump into it, because you could lose money in an instant.
Yeah, man. I dabbled in crypto a little bit, but it was so volatile. I lost all my money, or I lost like a significant chunk of my money. I was like, I'm taking it back out. And the majority of my wealth is in stocks, and a little bit of it is in index funds as well. In particular, Tesla. I put a little bit into Tesla when it was like around $300 a share before the 5-to-1 split, and I just been throwing all my excess money in my Roth IRA or in my individual account with Fidelity, and I have I like to really invest into companies that I know about, like tech, cars, or things that I use in my daily life. Like my phone, like it's a Samsung phone. I have an iPhone, so I invest in Apple. I invest in the Samsung. Companies that I know that are going to stick around for a while and have a steady increase in the stock price. And also, I love index funds, especially the S&P 500 index funds, because that measures the top 500 companies in is it the world or the USA?
USA.
Okay. So the S&P 500, I throw money into that as well. I haven't done much research on options yet. I've had a few coworkers mention it, but it just seemed extremely risky to me. And with my behavior with my crypto investments, I said, nah, I'm probably not a good fit for options.
Not
so exactly. And I love the idea of REITs being a way to invest into real estate without actually owning property. Hey, sorry about that. We had to take a quick break and we will be right back in a moment. Because it's a lot less risky in real life, but it's also not as lucrative as receiving like a rental payments from tenants. So I've been weighing just buying a fourplex, because you could get that rental income passively. So you're just sitting there, and I believe I read that you have to occupy one of the units in order to have a 2-5% down payment on a mortgage. Otherwise, if you end up renting out all four units, you have to pay, I think it's like 20% down in a mortgage. So the free game there for anybody that wasn't listening is that you can live mortgage free if you want to buy a fourplex, and you put the 2-5% down on your mortgage, you live in one of those units, you don't pay rent because your other tenants are taking care of your mortgage, and you get that excess over and above what your mortgage usually is, and you get to pocket that money. So you can live for free, and you can make money just by existing, just passively. So I've looked at that as well. As far as savings accounts, I have two, but that's not really where any major amount of money goes for me. So it may be like a couple hundred here and there I may throw in there, but the majority of my wealth, I just throw everything that I have into the stock market just so I can see it grow, because that compound interest is real, and you can calculate. If you go to bankrate.com, they actually have an investment calculator that if you set a goal for your investment for portfolio, and you set the length of time you want to achieve that goal, it actually gives you an amount of money that you have to invest every single, either it's monthly or biweekly, to reach that goal. So it's not impossible to retire early or attain financial independence. You just have to plan for it. And that's the biggest thing in life, period. Whether it's real life stuff like getting married, having kids, or what have you have to plan for that stuff. You can't just have a kid and expect the kid to be okay with they'll be okay, but as far as like financial taking care of the kid, buying diapers and things, you have to plan for that stuff, save some money for them, open a 529 for the education. Man, it's crazy the amount of information that we did not receive coming up, that we have to go through these difficult financial times, either using credit cards or misusing credit cards, just blowing money on the weekends at bars and things and hanging out. Just looking at that stuff now and looking back, there was a lot of money wasted. So going forward, you have to really, really understand where your money goes. Because you're literally exchanging time for money when you go to your job, whether you're salaried or whether you're hourly. Because salary people, we work way more than 40 hours a week. I promise you that. So, 100%. Yeah. So you don't want to like blow all of your hard-earned money on stuff that doesn't really matter for your future. So, man. shoot, we can, you guys want to talk about anything else?
I like how you talked about the housing, real estate investing with the terminology, which I learned not too long ago, and I wish I knew this back when I was in college and living on campus, is actually house hacking, which allows you to buy a fourplex or a multi-unit, up to four units of real estate with an FHA loan, which allows you to put down 3.5% of your money, as opposed to investing in it as a investment property, which you have to then put down 20%. So yes, that is a definitely a way to get into real estate investing, which I've actually been looking into to try to utilize that. Like you said, you have to stay there at least 1 year in order to utilize the FHA and the 3.5 down payment. But yeah, that's definitely a good way to get into real estate investing. If you have the opportunity to get in, utilize one of those units as opposed to having your own dwelling or home, so a single family home. So that is a good way. So yeah, I like that you touched base on that. Yeah, for sure.
Does that apply to just first time home buyers, or is that?
So FHA, you can use FHA anytime you get a home. So if you move out, you can get FHA again. So it doesn't end, or it doesn't stop, but as long as you utilize that unit or at least one of the units for a year, you can do it. So,
okay.
And then I'm actually looking into that now too. So
yes.
But
another question though, would businesses qualify for those same type of loans?
No. Different things. So FHA is primarily for personal residence, and for business, that's when it becomes a commercial loan. So then you have to put down the 20%.
I'm just thinking, like, as far as like any responsibility for, like, if a tenant like hurts themselves on property, and they want to sue, they're going to be coming after me personally.
It's always good to just have insurance anyway. Risk. But just to make sure you just have the right amount of insurance. So doing your research in regards to how much insurance you should have before you get into that, it's imperative. So, but that's what will really save you in regards to that. But knowing your tenants as well. Hopefully you don't have a litigious tenant trying to get in there.
Right.
Slipping fall, take a unit in your whole property, you know. So, getting your insurance properly would definitely save you there.
Cool, man. Trent, I heard you think about getting a fourplex as well, my friend.
Yeah, I've been looking at it for a while. The market is kind of crazy now. It's definitely like a seller's market. So I've been looking, but the prices are crazy. So, I've been looking at, anything from like 2 to 6, really. Trying to focus on like a four unit apartment in Chicago, but it's been hard. So if you guys have any recommendations, let me know.
Man, you know what?
Saving, preparing for it, need the opportunity at the right price too.
Hey, I was looking on Zillow the other night at fourplexes, and I was thinking, like, it doesn't have to be in the city that you currently reside in. It could be in like a rural town where it's like $1 to buy a fourplex. And you can still rent that stuff out. Like, I thought about that as well, because if you technically do you have to physically live there in the one unit, or do you have to have, can you have it yes. empty? Okay.
Yeah, you would.
It needs to be like your primary residence.
It has to be your primary residence. Primary residence.
It's technicality.
Yeah. They have to be your primary residence.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure people work around it.
Yeah, I'm like, you can take that to me.
I'll
let you give me that information afterwards.
I was like, can Dale even say that right now? that's a good way around it, man. If you buy like a whole like a fourplex in a rural city that you live nearby, that you can seldomly go out and physically visit and make sure everything's good. That is a good recommendation. I was looking at Arizona since I reside in Vegas. Vegas is, yeah. In Vegas's housing market is insane, and Arizona isn't as crazy. So I can get a fourplex for like 200 or 300 thousand, and after the 1 year of me physically primarily residing there, I could make endless money for the most part. Like, I could sell my house and move out of the country. That's my long term goal is to
early retirement.
Yes, the early retirement, man. I don't want to be in the U.S. because of a whole bunch of things, but mainly healthcare. Our healthcare system here is not the best. just being kind there, because you have other countries that have universal healthcare, and as we get older, we're going to require more healthcare. We're going to require probably more doctor's visits and things like that. But here in America, if you need a major surgery, that can bankrupt you. Like, if you need like a major surgery, that's $100,000. But if you just change countries, you go to Portugal or Spain, they have universal healthcare. They don't even know what a deductible is. So I want to move to a country that has universal healthcare, just not only for myself, but for my future family or what have you. They don't have to worry about all of that stuff, because medical debt here in the States is ridiculous. I don't even know how much the tally is for everyone here in the States. It's got to be in the hundreds of billions. And it's crazy. And I want to kind of circle back for a second to the first letter in Ardell's basic plan, budgeting. So how do you guys budget every paycheck?
So as I stated earlier, I pay myself first. So that's really the way the best way to really budget for me was learning to pay myself first. Before I pay any debts, anything, I pay myself first. So I always make sure and, utilize my direct deposits. I actually have 5 or 6 bank accounts, primarily for just different things. So I use my bank accounts to help me budget as well. But then I did kind of track it with an Excel sheet. But, if you don't have the time or you don't want to really get into the Excel sheets, utilize your banks and utilize credit unions, banks to be able to budget your money. So, like I said, I have several savings accounts and checking accounts too that I utilize for that purpose of budgeting. So, one is to pay myself first to save. Another one is for fixed expenses and variable expenses. I have another one that's for emergency fund. So that's really how I budget primarily, is just making sure I know where my money is going. If you know where your money is going, because everyone, if you have a 9-to-5, you essentially know how much you're going to make unless you're working on commission. So if you have a 9-to-5, you're making an hourly, you're going to have a fixed income anyway, unless you're working overtime. But if you know a standard 40 hours, you can budget from that. And then anything that's overtime, you could choose whether you save it or spend it. But if we're talking about generating wealth, I would say save it or invest that extra money outside of your 40 hours. But the very first thing is to pay yourself first, and then understanding what your income and your expenses are. 90% of your expenses are going to be fixed anyway. And then other things that are variable, such as food, clothing, you can kind of make an estimation every month. And that's really how I do it. And then at the end, you just know what your bottom line is every month. So that's really what the way I go about it. It's really just dividing up amongst my accounts and then going from there.
Cool. Do you use
that's an interesting way.
Do you use
spreadsheets? Way to use the my bad, Jack.
Oh, you good? It's just one of the downsides of online video. Yeah. Dale, do you use spreadsheets to keep track of all that stuff?
So I do. So I have a spreadsheet, and I follow it here and there, but I'm not a stickler for it as I was before, because like I said, I use my bank accounts to kind of track that. I check my accounts regularly. One for just fraud, but then also just to know what's going on and what's coming in. So as long as you have a way of tracking your inflows and outflows, you should be able to maintain a budget, And that's really what it is. It's just really being able to manage money management to an extent. So I do have a spreadsheet, which you can find on Excel. Excel has spreadsheets. There are some apps that you can utilize, to help you budget. But there are ways to go around about it, though.
Okay. All right. Trent, go ahead. How do you budget, sir?
Yeah, so I also use an Excel sheet. So, I mean, I do forecasting for companies. I used to, at least. So, if I'm doing a forecast for a company for a year, I can also forecast, my income and my expenses. So I literally have an Excel sheet every month where it talks about how much, rent. You have the fixed things, like you mentioned, so you have rent, utilities, some of those are variable, but I know in a given month, how much income I have for my checks. And also include other things. I think one area where people fall short is when you're doing the budgeting, it's not just your primary income, but if you know income tax time, if you know you're gonna get a refund, right, put in some sort of estimate for that. Generally speaking, you may get the same amount of year. So add that. If you know you're gonna get an additional check for whatever it could be, right? It could be related to stimulus checks or bonuses, right? All of those should be included in your budget. And then expenses. If you know in June you take a trip every year with your family, make sure you budget for that. So make sure you account again for all the inflows and outflows. So I have an Excel sheet that I use. I use it more in the beginning of the year. And then once I get a good routine and I understand at the end of the month, where I'm at, I don't use it as much because I kind of at that point got to know what's happening. But also I have multiple accounts. There's an account that I use for traveling. So any of my traveling expenses goes to that account. I have an emergency fund account. And then there's a separate account just for my direct deposit. So I use that to basically pay off my credit card. So having multiple accounts, I think also is a great way to help to create routines and to segment, your expenses and your income as well.
Cool, man. Dang. You guys are really have things under control. It seems like you guys have been doing this for a while. for myself, I also use spreadsheets. I keep a list of all my variable expenses and all my fixed expenses. And then I have a running total of both of those. And then I have what my total is in my bank account that is meant for those larger variable and fixed expenses. And then before I pay a single thing, I do all of the math and I do all the subtractions from that amount that's currently in my bank account. And then what's left over after that payment, I just let it stay there. And because I have other accounts that feed right into my Roth IRA, that feed in right into my Fidelity individual account. So the money that's left over from spending on bills, I let it stay there, maybe for a nice splurge on a meal or something. I may just go and spend that, but I would like to invest a lot more into the stock market. So in order to reach my own FIRE goal, I have to save about 60% of my income to retire about 40. And I think it all starts with basics. It's budgeting is always first. And like Ardell said, you have to pay yourself first. And then to reiterate what all of us said, you have to make sure that you keep track of everything as well. And it's crazy. That's the first thing you want to think about, is always trying to budget. And also you have to look at your debt when you budget, because there is a difference between good debt and bad debt. It looks like your call ends in 10 minutes. Uh-oh, we got to upgrade to the... No worries. We're good. If we fall off, we can just reconnect. But good debt versus bad debt. You guys have a lot more experience in the corporate world than I do when it comes to finance. So in your own words, how do you guys describe good versus bad debt to others, to other humans?
When we talk about good debt and bad debt, as you stated, you should also consider that within your budget. So if we want to look at good debt versus bad debt, so debt is essentially can only is only to me as bad if you mismanage it. So if you're using credit cards and you're maxing them out, then it becomes bad debt. If you have a home and you are late on your payment, you have a mortgage, you're late on your payments, or auto loan, you're late on your payments, that becomes bad debt because those are things that are necessities. A home and a vehicle, depending on your geographical location, those are necessities. Well, a home anyway, but a car is becomes a necessity. So debt to me only becomes bad depending on how you utilize it and how you mismanage it. Like I said, credit cards for me, there are benefits to it. One, it helps you. It can be a tool to help you budget and manage your money. But then when you talk about cash rewards, points and things of that nature, those are benefits to what you're going to spend anyway. So if you're going to spend those funds, why not utilize those credit cards to actually get those benefits? If you at the end of the day is to pay it off and not attain any interest. But if you can maintain and manage that with your credit cards, it no longer becomes bad debt. It turns to good debt. Auto loan, if you pay it on time, it's good debt. So I think depending on how you manage that debt in itself depends on what makes it good or bad. But then when you talk about good debt overall, though, is if you are taking, like we mentioned, house hacking, taking a mortgage for a multi-unit and utilizing that to generate wealth. So you're using what they call it, the acronym is other people's money, OPM. And you're utilizing that debt to help you acquire generational wealth. So that's, or attain that wealth. So that's really what the difference to me in regards to good debt and bad debt is just how you manage it and how you use it. But yeah.
Hey, sorry about that. We had to take a quick break and we will be right back in a moment.
I agree. I think, ultimately, like debt, right, is an instrument, a tool to borrow money from someone else, right, from a bank. It can be a personal loan. It can be a loan from a friend, right? But it's, borrowing money to use it for someone else. So in my view, I would consider it good debt if it's used to drive more income, right? So if you are purchasing a mortgage, if you're purchasing real estate and you're going to have renters, right, this is something that's going to get you more money. If you need the car to get back and forth to work, right, you probably need that. That's going to help you increase your income. Student loans, I think, is another good debt, right, because that's going to increase, for the most part. I think this is one thing that's debatable, but for the most part, if you're at an accredited university and you graduate with some debt, that should translate to higher income, right? So again, there's some if and or is there, but I would say ultimately, good debt is debt that you use as an instrument that's going to drive more income, more equity down the road.
Hey, that's what's up, man. That was a lot more detailed than what I was going to say. for myself, I kind of lean more towards Dave Ramsey's mindset of having zero debt. So, to me, any debt besides maybe a mortgage is bad debt to me. Any good debt would be a mortgage. My dog is acting a fool in the background. Apologies for that.
He agrees.
Yeah, and I mean the word debt, I think it has a negative connotation with a lot of people. It makes it seem like, hey, you don't have enough money to pay it in cash. You gotta go into debt to buy it.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the truth, because I've seen people that have a million plus in their stock in their portfolio, and they're like, hey, I'm getting the stock market is on average supposed to rise 7%, 7 to 10% per year, and he's like, man, how do I buy a Tesla? I want to buy a Tesla. And he's like, should I use my 1.5 mil in my stock portfolio to buy it cash? Or should I finance it using the bank's money if I can secure an auto loan that is 2% or lower. And if you think about it, if the stock market goes up 7 to 10% per year, if you use that money in the stock market, you're losing that 7 to 10% raise on that money that you took out to buy a car that's going to depreciate as soon as you drive it off the freaking lot. And I would rather use the bank's money at 2% to finance that car and use that mindset to just scale it up to buy like a fourplex. Like we keep talking about this fourplex idea, this house hacking idea. And I think in certain situations it's good to have that kind of debt where your investments outweigh what the bank is giving you as far as your interest rate goes. So that's a good way to look at making the auto loan in the good debt pile instead of bad debt, because I think, at least in my mind, an auto loan is bad debt. But it is what it is. But man, we only have a few more minutes here. Don't want to take up too much.
Auto loan good debt if you utilize, you know, start using Toro or higher car.
That's a big brain idea right there, man. I know a lot of people that are doing that, and it's becoming pretty lucrative for them. You just, for anyone that is listening or watching this, like, weigh those risks on your own. Do your own research, because Turo, there have been bad experiences with Turo and also great ones, and we see the majority bad ones, because the good ones, they don't really make YouTube videos or leave reviews, you know. So just do your homework and weigh those pros and cons for using your car on Turo or any other thing that is like Turo. So let's hit on the final thing. I know we have a little bit of a list here, but I do want to start on FIRE. So have you two probably have heard of FIRE before. If not, you can let me know if we can explain it together if you want. What do you guys think?
So I've heard it before, but I'm not exactly familiar with it. I know, like you keep stating, financial independence and retire early. So I know that's what the acronym stands for. Essentially, I think it speaks for itself in regards to what it means. Financial independence is really not really having to depend on a 9-to-5 or you know, something of that nature to exchange your time for money. And then just retiring early, whatever that age range is or the age limit is for you personally, is really what it is to. I know Jay said he wanted to get there by 40. So, you know, depending on where that number is, that's where it really is. And I know there are some steps in regards to how FIRE works. But I know, Jay, you mentioned it earlier, so I'm sure I'm going to assume that you have some kind of a little bit more understanding of how that works. So.
It's a tiny bit. What about you, Trent? Have you heard of the acronym being used before?
I have a kind of same understanding as Gargill, right? That it's this overall concept that if you're trying to retire earlier, you need a certain amount of money in your investment portfolios, whatever it may be, right? Real estate. So I know that it's, again, a way to budget and to plan for early retirement. Yeah, you can definitely talk through more detail. So I'll be learning something here too.
Yeah, for sure. So I learned the majority of my knowledge from the YouTube channel, My Rich Journey. It's a couple of folks that are from the DC area they're from the North California area of the US, but they currently reside in Portugal. And they said that you have to reach your FIRE number. So we are live. Okay. We had to take a quick intermission there for everybody listening and or watching. So we left off talking about FIRE. So FIRE stands for FIRE. FIRE stands for financial independence, retire early. And it is fueled by what people are calling the FIRE number. So what the FIRE number is, it is your yearly expenses, what you project that you will be spending yearly after retirement. So it's for myself, my FIRE number, my starting FIRE number was 40 grand. That's what I calculated, what I would be spending after retirement. So you have to multiply that by 25. So if you do the math, 40 grand times 25, that's a mil. So I would be able to be financially independent and retire early when my investment portfolio reaches $1 million. And you can achieve your FIRE number either through investing in the stock market, real estate, or what have you, like a side hustle, anything that you can use to create another stream of income that you can apply to the stock market. You can just throw money at it, make more intelligent investments, go with mutual funds or index funds if you don't really like to invest in individual companies. And over time, you'll see that portfolio increase. And once you hit that FIRE number, you can put in your 2 weeks and peace. You can just say, hey, I never have to work again. Because how the math works is that with the stock market having the 7 to 10% increase per year, it puts you in a position where you're not only beating inflation, you are, when you take out your money after retirement, with that year passing, it'll just grow right back up to $1 million. So you technically and mathematically will never run out of money if you just continue taking out that 40K or what have you, whatever your original FIRE number was. If you take that out every single year, it'll just rebuild itself back up to what it's supposed to be. So you can live forever off of your FIRE number. And that's it. Are you guys pressed for time?
I got a quick follow-up question. So that part makes sense to me. So what do you do in the interim, right? If you say that you're early, let's say like you're trying to retire at 45, just make sure I'm grasping this correctly. Mm-hmm. You're trying to retire at 45, or does that FIRE number assume that to retire at 65? Is that it?
It's assuming that. So whatever that you think you will spend after your retirement age, that will be like your number to multiply by 25. But it can be depending on how you
like the retirement period.
Exactly. Yeah, and it also depends on what your lifestyle will be. So I don't think I can spend 40K in a year if I don't have any real high expenses. But that all ties into a topic we didn't really get time to touch on, which is Dave Ramsey's 7 baby steps. And in the first or second is to clear all of your debt besides your mortgage. So if you see yourself spending less money per year after retirement, then your FIRE number is going to be lower and you can retire earlier than you would have ever thought. So it's a real thing, man. I've seen a whole bunch of YouTubers talking about it and actually living it. And
yeah. What do you do in the interim? So if you retire, let's say you retire at 50, so there's 15 years before you can withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
Is this suggesting that you withdraw from your retirement, or is it saying that you would have other streams of income to hold you down until you actually retire?
So what they have said that they just put money into their individual account, not their Roth IRA or their 401k, so they don't have any penalties if they withdraw it earlier. They didn't speak about any capital gains tax, but I assume that, yeah, you'll pay a capital gains tax when you withdraw it, but they never talk about it. So are we the first to talk about it? Because every YouTuber, whenever they post a video about something like that, they think they only mention the pros and they don't really focus on or even touch on the cons. So if we're talking about that, capital gains, you would have to probably take out a little bit more. So you would have to just increase your FIRE number accordingly to what you can estimate what the capital gains tax will be. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a cool concept. I was just trying to think through what that means when you actually retire early, because you wouldn't seemingly you wouldn't take out the money at that point, but maybe you do.
Yeah.
And you just, you know, account for those capital gains and the taxes. So
Yeah.
So I guess my understanding is it's just basically having maintaining a minimum of $1 million for the duration during that time of 25 years and following your retirement age.
Yep. Yep. And okay. Once you reach that retirement age, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So when you take your, like you said, your $40,000 out, if you maintain your retirement account, your money should, based on compound interest, should accumulate again back to where that original million was.
Correct.
So every year it'll be $1 million.
Yeah.
Up until 65 and throughout. So okay.
Yeah, and then after 65, man, you can you'll be filthier rich because you can take out everything without penalty. So if you have a pension, you can get your pension. If you have Social Security, if it even survives by the time we get to 65, you get to have that. You've got a 401k, you get to withdraw that. If you got a Roth, you can take that out. Oh man, like I think that the real race is having enough money till you reach 65. That's the real race. Yeah. So yeah, for sure, man. Like shoot, I'm trying to think of anything we can hit on really quickly that wouldn't take up too much more time.
I mean, so since you talked about like you keep touching base and mentioning Roths and 401ks, it's a lot of time people are people talk about those two investment vehicles as more of a savings account, and I dislike that because there is risk associated with the 401k and IRA because it is attached primarily to the stock market. So stock market goes up and it goes down. So depending on what kind of investment product your 401k or IRA utilizes, sometimes there are floors, so a minimum of what you can lose. But you know, if that isn't the case, just understand that those are not savings vehicles. They are investment vehicles. So there is risk associated with it. But I would say utilize those if you are with a company that matches your 401k. So if you can get that, it is essentially free money, unless you withdraw it. So it is free money. So if your company does 5% match, 6% match, whatever, utilize it as best you can. That helps you get free money as long as you're employed with them.
And
if you have it in there until you retire, I mean, if you work with them until 65, that's a lot of money to be gained. It doubles your money, triples your money. So definitely utilize that tool.
Compound interest is going to be my best friend, or all of our best friends, if we play our cards right and make sure that our finances are looking right every single paycheck. So, man, 401.
I'm a big person. Like Trent said earlier, the more you make, the more your higher expenses get. It's like the more I increase in wealth and in income, I actually like to spend less. I don't know. I like to spend less. I'm like, look, I like to see my stuff increase. Now I want to see it increase. It's not, now it's a game. Like, how do I increase it? So I'm seeing a bigger number. But that's
a good quality. You're unique in that. Most
people are not. It's like. I'm gonna see it. and that's a good way to do it. Like, just kind of being frugal. A lot more frugal with your money, and when your income rises, it's a good idea to keep your lifestyle the same, or even less. If you can find corners to cut that doesn't cut the bone, cut it. So, if we all play our financial cards right, we can all retire. All three of us, we can retire a lot earlier than 65. And it's already in the works because we have very, very great financial minds. We're numbers guys, and we can see where this stuff goes. So are there any closing remarks before we close out this podcast episode officially?
My thing is, hey, look, maintain that financial journey. If you haven't started it, started as early as possible. As Jay keep mentioning, compound interest. So the earlier you start, the better to reaching that fire goal that he's mentioning. And look, just, you know, like I said, I follow that pay yourself first, the basics, budget, save, invest, credit. Put that credit at the end if you have to, but make sure you know how to manage your money and know your risk tolerance. There is emotion into investing, but if you take the emotion out, you will gain a lot more in a shorter period of time than you will lose. So that's just my thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll just say, you know, as you're on this personal finance journey, to make sure you're utilizing all the different resources. There's a plethora of YouTube videos you can find. There's books, there's podcasts. I mean, there's literally anywhere you can find information on, you know, tips and techniques to increase your wealth. So make sure you're checking out those. And think about your financial journey as like a long-term play. I think a lot of people think about, you know, these quick wins. I'm going to put in money into the stock market and get it out tomorrow. But like, think about it as a long-term play as you think about retirement and that FIRE number.
Yes, yes, yes. Please don't use your investment accounts as savings accounts. Just like just like Ardell said, please think about the long term. People are so focused, so laser focused on the short term gains. Like, hey, if I give you $100, can you put an extra zero and give me $1,000 by tomorrow? No, that's not how investing works. It's not how money works. You have to invest it properly, and you have to invest in for the long term. And that's my closing remark there. Just invest for the long term and know where your money's going.
Short-term gains for long-term investment.
Yep. And it's all about, it's a marathon, not a race, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like Trent said, read those books. Read books. I have books in here. One of the richest men in Babylon, man, teaches you those principles of save, paying yourself first and saving and budgeting. So that's one of the, just sitting right here. So it just so happened to be sitting right here. So read, and it's good to read books and acquire that information.
And the biggest secret.
The biggest secret.
Another secret is books are available at the library. And library cards are free. And all you got to do is literally go into your library, show your ID that you reside in that state, get yourself a library card, educate yourself. Not everything is available on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or what have you. The best info is going to be between those pages.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, and it's free. Like, people love free stuff so much they don't absorb free knowledge. That's the crazy thing. Like, hey, can I eat for free? Can I drink for free? Can I learn for free? People don't think about learning for free. And like, it's all available. It's literally, YouTube is free, the library is free. You can get free Wi-Fi at Starbucks or the library. Like, just utilize your resources. All the tools are there, bro. You have to just go out there and pick them up yourself. Pick up those tools and put them on your tool belt and get ready to use those tools in the future. Cause you're going to be, you only hear once, man. We will not be able to relive our lives based on what we learned in this life. So we have to learn as much as we can right now so we can finish our lives in grace and feel good about it. And we're not hampered financially because we didn't prepare up until that point. So please prepare yourself, everybody, because hyperinflation is coming just because of the pandemic. we didn't even get talking on that because we're out of time.
Yeah, that's a whole nother topic.
But listen.
Free money, not free money. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
Free money is really not free money.
Them STEMIs going to come for y'all. But thank you to everybody that has listened this far into our podcast. And thank you for everybody that has watched it up until this point. And I just want to say thank you for your time, Dale and Trent. I know you guys are pretty busy, and you gave all of us time in your lives you can never get back. So I'm very appreciative of your effort, your mind, and the way that you guys think. And I just want to say thank you to you guys. And we can just do a round robin of who we are before we finally close out officially here. I'll let you guys go first, and then I'll do my whole little animated spiel for an outro. So you guys can go ahead.
Again, Ardell Muse, personal financial, I won't say guru, but you know, I'm learning as I go along and having an understanding of how this goes. If you want to reach out, then follow me on Instagram. It's at debonair underscore financial financier. So DEBONIAR or AIR underscore FINANCIER.
It's all good. I'm gonna put it in the description box so everybody can follow us.
That was a long title.
And I've been spelled it, so I know they like,
is it AE? Underscore. Right. Where's the underscore? Go ahead, Trent.
And then I'm Trenton Harvey. You can follow me on IG at Mr. Underscore Harvey. I'm, you know, just like you guys on this financial journey. So if you have questions or concerns, have any tips, you know, I'm open to those as well. You know, we're all trying to learn and grow and become better. So thanks again, Jay, for having us.
Yes, sir.
Cool, cool, cool. And everybody should know that my dog is so cute. He's like right here. Thank you guys for everything. And again, my name is Las Vegas Jay. Please subscribe if you're not subscribed already. And I'm also co-host of the Culture Exchange podcast, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podcast, and Podcast. So thank you guys for listening to this and watching. And stay tuned for more finance stuff. And get your money right, everybody. Get your money right. Free info, free video. That's all y'all get today. Thank you guys so much.
All right.